You are listening to the This Life podcast with Dr. Drew Pinsky and me, Mike Catherwood.
That's right. We're doing it this time. So check it out. Thanks for listening.
You live.
I dig that. You live right there in the opening.
It's we should really hammer home why
what that is. Okay, well, hang on a second. So let me just say.
No, I'm kidding.
No,
sincerely kidding.
No, we're going to talk about where that came from. So, okay. But just a second. So this is a special This Life podcast. Brought to my radio partner presently. You can hear us both on KBC 790 AM, Midday Live, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 Pacific time. So our number here is 323-649-8268 if you want to call and be a part of the program. And so you live. Tell the story.
There's a scene at the end of Boogie Nights where Dirk Diggler is no longer – formerly Eddie Adams. He takes on the moniker Dirk Diggler. And he's no longer like the head porn guy. He's no longer the rock star of porn.
The videos are taken over from film.
Right, and he's hit hard times because of drugs, and he is broken and high and tweaking out on meth. And so Johnny Doe has taken over for Dirk Diggler. And Johnny Doe's character, he plays like a hard-boiled cop.
Maniac.
And in one of the scenes of his porn movies, he is a gun to the head of a young lady who is filleting him. He's deciding whether or not this blowjob is good enough for her to live. If not, he's going to shoot her. And then he decides, yes, in fact, this blowjob is good enough. You live.
You live.
And he screams it out. He's like, you live, bitch. Yeah!
And so that was his voice, the opening of this sequence.
Here. And for years on Loveline, we just because we thought that was funny, we started saying "You live," and then
it became a greeting.
Naturally, it became like kind of this positive rally.
No,
became
"You live" became like a first of all a code, like just the way you'd say.
It was like our Baba Booey.
Hey Now. It was like Hey Now for the Stern Show fans out there, and it became more generalized even to be like Aloha. It's like hello, it's goodbye. It was like a greeting.
I agree.
So it was great. Let's bring in Dave Navarro. How about that?
All right.
Hey, man.
How are you guys?
We're good.
Thanks for having me.
Dave Navarro. Does Dave need an intro?
He's one of the most important figures in alternative rock music.
Yeah. I mean.
That's very kind.
Peppers. Were you in Chili Peppers when Bob Forrest was hanging around with them?
Well, no, but I knew Bob Forrest from the Jane's Addiction days, early days, 1988, 89. Actually played with Thelonious Monster a number of times and did a lot of drugs with Bob, too, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Everybody did drugs with Bob, but he freaked everybody out.
Well, he was one of those guys, and God rest his soul, like Scott Weiland was, who when like-minded people got together and did drugs together, there was one guy where we all looked at each other and were like, well, thank God we're not like that guy.
Because that's the guy the Chili Peppers all looked to and went,
We would be sitting there with needles hanging out of our arms going, as long as we're not doing what Bob's doing, we're okay.
And it says just, a lot to the recovery community that he is now a big part of.
It's amazing. And it is such a testament to how well that community can work for people.
Yeah.
If someone who's fallen that far can be doing what he's doing and living the life he's living.
Yeah, and everybody knows the guy or gal who's not doing too well that somehow turns it around. Bob was written off. I mean,
we all wrote him off. Yeah.
Because he was in and out and in and out for a decade.
But he's one of these guys who would come pound on your door and you'd pretend you weren't home. He's that guy.
I'll never forget this. They're at a 12-step group. I can't say which one. But in the literature, it says, we realize we know only a little. And it's a preamble that talks about, you know, the program. And he's like, see, right here. They know a little. See, they're saying, they're admitting they don't know everything.
So he was making a big issue of
that. He would go through the literature and find loopholes as to why he could get high.
There's a famous story about
him
coming to meetings and drinking beer in the back of the room. And he likes to piss people off. And he was so frustrated that when he left the meeting, they'd always go, come on, Bob, keep coming back, man. It's all right.
Yeah.
And he's like, screw you guys. So he kept coming back.
Yeah, yeah. And he was actually became somebody who I wanted to emulate. I mean, he went from a guy who I was fearful of to a guy that I wanted to be like,
which is
pretty incredible.
If anybody wants to learn more about that stage of his life, watch Bob and the Monster. You've seen that documentary?
I haven't. You recommended it, and I intend to.
So good.
I feel like I was there for a lot of it, so it's not really going to be showing me anything I don't know.
There has to be parts of a lot of music documentaries where you think to yourself, like, that was at the peak of, I'm sure, a lot of fun, but really dark times for you. You know,
oh,
you're,
yeah,
you're thinking back. I mean, there's probably albums you don't want to listen to.
There are albums I don't remember making.
Yeah,
for sure. And like, I would imagine my favorite one to listen to, which is Ritual, De Lo Habitual, I don't remember making, and I've recently come to learn that we made it twice.
You seriously don't remember any of the studio?
I mean, process? I remember being in the room, I remember where it was, but I don't have no recollection of putting tracks down.
God.
And I came to learn maybe 20 years later that we recorded the whole album and it was terrible and we scrapped it and started again. And I had zero recollection of that.
And it just because you knew the songs were great, it's just the quality of the recording was terrible because of...
I think the performances were poor.
Yeah.
I think, honestly.
Wow.
And the crazy thing is that the drugs that I was doing weren't like blackout drugs. It just was such a muted existence, which is really right. The best way to describe it.
That so is
I,
a great way
I was able to be there, but I was just wasn't able to experience anything or feel anything.
Matthew Perry says that he doesn't remember most of filming Friends.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, and so think and put that into consideration. Oof. Like Dave said, it's not like they're drinkers or you know, using hallucinogens. It's
you
just
can
that you're
function.
Getting to the level that you're so empty that you just kind of that goes away.
Yeah, and you might remember it if you're back. It's called state-dependent learning. Sometimes people go back into the state they were in. They'll suddenly remember things when they were in that state.
Mm.
Well, I'm not saying you should return to that state.
Oh, well, as a stimulant addict, I am completely the opposite. I become hyper
aware of everything.
Aware
oh, yeah.
of, like, if I listen to Ritual, especially like songs like 3 Days and stuff, I get freaky because I think of my like summer days and you know Altadena, like just sitting there smoking rocks, you know.
So you were a crack guy or a meth
guy?
I
love to smoke crack and yeah. And meth for a long time too. It depended really depended on geography.
I mean, you're
in California, it was so much easier to use meth.
My guess when I was on some crazy scary ass stories about meth dealers.
Oh yeah.
Oh
yeah. I mean, I dabbled in that world. I was the kind of drug user that if my primary choice wasn't available, right. I'd still settle for what you have.
How's it going? Yeah, you know, garbage can.
I have a quick question. Have we welcomed our Facebook audience yet? Are they here yet? Okay, welcome everyone on Facebook. Thank you for joining us. Also at the YouTube channel, they're out there. Okay, YouTube, thank you. And you're getting your wish. Mike and I are doing a podcast. There have been lots and lots of demands.
Demands.
That Loveline be the Loveline team be reunited in a podcast. This is the You Live podcast.
Well,
if
and
you
also
like it, what?
A podcast where we take calls.
Yeah, we take call. And which is different than our KBC show. Those of you that listen to 790 AM here in Los Angeles, we do a daily show that's more about what's going on in the world. But we miss everybody. So we wanted to come in, do calls. Recreate the magic a little bit, and Dave Navarro very kindly asked, kindly agreed to join us.
323-649-8268.
Dave's, and we'll be here for a while. So you know, if you don't get through, hang on or call me. You know, we'll sort of announce to you how long we're going to be here. But Dave's got a radio show. He very kindly had me on. It's Dark Matter. You can see it on Dash Radio. You can hear it on Dash Radio. I'm on episode 43. And that was really fun.
Yeah.
What a great setup, that Dash
yeah,
thing.
Yeah,
do you know about this
really
Dash
nice.
Setup?
I'm aware of it. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Do tons of live radio out of there. It's all internet. But then, you know, we throw the podcast up after the broadcast. And, yeah, it's the best place I've found so far.
Where do they get the podcast?
iTunes.
iTunes.
So just go to iTunes, search.
Not your website or something.
No, I made sure because there are so many different places and it gets confusing out there. And now, you know, the marketplace is so congested with podcasts and shows. And is it YouTube? Is it this? Is it that? iTunes is the one. That's just the number one podcast download place.
You're good at it, though. I mean, you've always been good at being on the radio. It takes a certain, it's obviously not playing classical violin, but. Some people don't have that ability. Even since the Camp Freddy days, I've always thought, like, man, you're good at being.
Well,
on
what I love, and that was at Indy 103.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. What I love about it is that it's instantaneous. It goes away immediately. Well, now you can play it back.
It used to go out into the vapors.
But it's live. Yeah, it used to go out into the vapors.
Yeah.
And then I was psyched to come in here and do, you know, I was asked by your lovely wife, Dr. Drew's podcast, you know, to come in. I was like, great. Can't wait to be there. And then she's like, don't wear any stripes because there's cameras. And I was like, ah. So it's not really that fun, is it? You know what I mean? Because like that's the other thing I loved about radio is that
there's no
visual.
I know, I would come in like pajamas.
You'd still be shirtless anyway. Don't lie.
Hell yeah.
We know.
Hell yeah.
Cole and I would come in like really look like homeless people.
Yeah. And then they went. Now then, the advent of the cell phone, everybody wants a picture, so you kind of got to put it together.
I like that you say like Carole and I used to, as if Adam now wears a tuxedo everywhere he goes.
Oh yeah,
like,
I know. But
Adam's
we
the pinnacle
his thing
of male
too,
fashion.
The Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, we sit in front of cameras on that thing too. Not everyone gets to see it if they have some sort of way of getting to it, but you know, you
Adam was the, Adam really was ahead of his game though, as far as complaining that. Because, I mean, listen, no one really, besides maybe Stern, has ever achieved as much in radio as Adam. He's the, one of the kings of terrestrial, you know, syndicated radio. And but he used to complain all the time. I remember listening on Loveline. He'd be about, like, everything I do, I leave this room tonight, this studio, and it just kind of goes away.
Oh,
he and that's why he was so motivated to do movies.
Yeah, he would tell me. He goes, we're creating or manufacturing something, and all this byproduct goes down the river.
But I mean, that's no different than a live performance.
Yeah,
I mean, that is what you know. You tune in for the live
that's
moment.
That's nice. Yeah,
that's what's exciting. Yeah. That's what I miss about a lot of live performances, and certainly musicianship on stage is that a lot of it is tracks, a lot of it is pre-recorded, and you miss that. A visceral experience.
I saw who was it that I saw like on a reunion tour, and even for me, who's like a big fan and someone who appreciates, gets really geeky about like the nuances of rock and roll. Mm. It was Pavement. Pavement got back together maybe like 5-6 years ago, and they were playing. And I was, it took me, someone who fell in love with those songs and really loves live performances. It took me a bit to adjust to hearing mistakes. Because even rock bands nowadays, like Dave says, they play to tracks and there's so much kind of like pre-recorded electronic noises and things. Like it was weird.
We actually put our mistakes on tracks. So so if you hear mistakes at a Jane's Addiction show, they're intended. They're actually on the backing tracks.
Yeah. And there's something like that.
But we're both not sure if you're serious or not.
The reason why I assumed you were telling the truth and that you wouldn't, I obviously wouldn't.
It's to make it appear as though it was live. You throw a mistake on the track, then
the
that
same
people...
reason you're using vinyl. You could have done that for the same reason you're using vinyl, because it's a lost form.
It's a lost form. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I remember Perry on Loveline telling us that you guys were one of the few bands that wrote to the lyrics. As opposed to like the band getting together and writing music and then Perry going and doing some poetry.
I don't understand that kind of music making. And I think that's one of the things that happened, you know, because I spent a few years in the Chili Peppers after coming from Jane's Addiction, did like a couple years in Chili Peppers, and then went back to Jane's Addiction. And it was so alien to me that the band wrote a bunch of songs and then just presented them to Anthony and he would write the lyrics afterwards. It's, you know, there's no right or wrong way to do it, but... It struck me as really strange because I felt like if we don't know the story we're telling, how do you create the music?
Mm. I've had that thought myself. Yeah. I'm not a musician, but I always wondered how that worked.
It works really well for a lot of people. I just don't relate to it.
Yeah,
it's.
You see the Beatles?
I mean, there's certain acts though that you realize there's no possibility.
I just watched
they would do the opposite.
I just watched the Beatles thing, Touring Years. Uh-huh. Did that doc? Is that the one you saw?
No,
it's another good one. It's a Ron Howard film.
Oh, the Ron Howard
thing. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. There's several parts to that, correct?
I guess. I saw the Touring Years, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. It was pretty amazing. I didn't realize multiple parts. I got to watch the rest
of it. I think that's the one that has multiple parts, but it could be
because they end at Sgt. Pepper.
Because they're speaking of vinyl, I recently went back and got all those old Beatles records.
The mono ones,
And if you listen to Sgt. Pepper on vinyl, the way it came out, it is a weird experience. Super weird.
It's true. It's totally different. Bean was, from Kevin and Bean, was telling, you know, when they first, it was maybe a decade ago, they released a lot of the Beatles albums in original mono, how they're supposed to be, you know. And he's like, you got to go out and you've got to go get them. It's totally different. And I was like, how different can it be? But Dave's right. You go back, you listen to it. That's how they intended it. And there's a reason, you know.
Let's talk to John real quick, if you can, Tony, real quick. John, I'm going to pull him up. Hey, John.
Hey, this is John Leiderman, by the way.
Photoshop wizard. John, I didn't imagine this being your voice somehow, but good to meet you.
Esme told me just to tell you guys hi. She's going to try to call in, but she doesn't know if she can or not.
The only Mexican in Wisconsin, Esme.
Really, truly.
Yeah, you know, she's a great champion of the Dr. Drew podcast.
But John, thank you for all the tweets and the follow and everything. He follows our KBC show every day, and we look forward to what he has to say. So thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to call and say hi, and it's awesome being the first caller too. Sweet.
Thank you, dude.
Yeah, that worked pretty well. And you know, you think we should keep doing this?
Yes, for sure. Right. For sure.
All right, buddy, you live.
Get going. Get going.
All right, you live too.
You live, sir. Get going on some Photoshop for us for this show.
Oh, he's going to be up with it. He's going to be up with it.
I will do.
He's very he's, I don't like it, but he steers away from you and I having gay sex.
You keep putting that.
I would appreciate it if there was like some serious.
And my listeners have no problem with that.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about Ink for a second.
What do you want to know?
We see it on Spike. Right?
Oh, my show. Yeah. Ink Master. It's on Spike TV. It's Tuesdays from. I think it's at 10 p.m., I think. I haven't seen it in quite a while.
Six seasons? How many?
We're on season 9. We're starting season 10
in
a couple of months.
It's a great show. It's very enjoyable. I have tattoos. I like the art. I like the culture. Mm. But even you had to, like, after season 1 or 2, you're thinking to yourself, like, okay, I'll cash this check, but there's no way.
I didn't think in a million years. In a million years. 10 seasons of this thing. But, you know, what we've come to learn is that it's fascinating to watch people, whether you're a fan of tattooing or not.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to understand and see the artistry at work.
Yeah.
Because really, that's the star of the show, is the artistry. And I think that people who aren't into tattoos, like my father, watched it with me one time and was really blown away with the fact that this is a legitimate art form that requires skill and talent. And, you know, I think if anything good has come from the show, it's that we've made that globally a little bit more known.
I think that is for a lot of people from a lot of any generation kind of before my, I mean, probably anyone Drew's age and above, is that they just up until, you know, recently did not believe it was art.
Yeah.
It was just, it's something dirty sailors did.
Yeah, certainly when I was growing up. For sure. But what did my wife just ask you when you came in here?
She asked me for a recommendation for a tattoo artist in New York.
And I told her what to get.
Crazy thing about the longevity of the show. Last year's winner, Ryan Ashley, was not a tattoo artist when season 1 premiered.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah. And then went on to win the whole thing.
That does not help things when you hear things like that. When, like, I've talked to plenty of people who, like, have a decades long career in radio who are like, I grew up listening to you. I'm like, dude, how is, whoa, I'm not you, I'm not at you grew up listening to me phase yet.
Well,
that's,
I mean,
for Drew.
She won this particular and the thing about this competition, I want to make this very clear and we'll move off it, but, you know, a lot of people think we're looking for the greatest tattooer in the world, or we're looking the greatest. We're not. Whoever wins this game wins this game. It's full of a lot of different twists and turns, and they're strategizing and they're throwing people under the bus, and so it's more like Survivor with tattooing.
It's a TV show.
So she won this season fair and square, and she's a gifted, great tattooer. But does that mean that whoever wins Ink Master is the greatest in the world? Not by a mile. And I don't know if there is a greatest in the world.
Now, producer Susan, do we need to take a break? It's been past the time you said I should break.
Absolutely.
Okay. And for our Facebook viewers and YouTube, do they get a break too? Or do they?
No, they should stay tuned.
They get to watch Geico commercials.
They get to watch us continue to
conversate. I will say the best investment I ever made was YouTube Red.
It's great.
I will tell you, it's worth whatever it costs a month to skip every ad.
You should get into YouPorn Brown. It's a whole different.
Take a break. Be right back for this. Now, there are a lot of factors that lead to recovery, and particularly success in recovery, but programs that challenge patients, that don't gratify them, that often is the most effective. And that's what we like about Last House Sober Living in Los Angeles. Last House, structured program based on accountability and your actions, living a certain kind of life. Not like those luxury treatment centers that kind of feed the narcissism, entitlement, selfishness. Last House works to combat the learned helplessness some of these millennials have. Also, device dependency. A lot of places shrink from that one. And the codependent family system that needs a lot of help. The community challenges addicts with disciplinary systems that teaches them consequences for their choices and actions. The program isn't easy. In fact, it's quite difficult. It's supposed to be difficult. It's hard work to recover. Their theory is, much like diamonds, recovered addicts are forged under pressure. If you or a loved one is looking for a program that aligns with so many of the characteristics we believe lead to a successful recovery, please have a look at Last House. Learn more, visit thelasthouse.net. Again, that is thelasthouse.net. Visit them today. Welcome back. This is a You Live special This Life podcast, and we're on YouTube and we're on Facebook, and we appreciate you guys all being here. And the reason, amongst other things, there was a big demand for Mike and I to recreate the magic again and take calls, which we're anxious to do. We'll get to in just a second here. And you can watch us. You listen to us every day on 790 AM talk radio if you want.
Yes, you can.
But we don't get these kinds of calls there. So let's go. Let's go to.
We get the thing about liberals is.
Yeah. Or I disagree with your guess. Okay, let's talk to Chansey. Chansey. She's 15, whatever that number is.
I'm going to say it's Chauncey.
They said like Chance.
Damn.
She actually wrote it out
Chauncey
for me.
As in being there.
Hello?
Peter Sellers.
Chansey, am I spelling your name correctly? Chansey Gardner.
This is crazy, everyone. Namaste.
Namaste.
My name is Chansey. I'm calling from the Netherlands.
Oh, hi. Fantastic.
Wow. As most callers are. Yes.
Have you been to the Van Gogh Museum there?
My heart, like my heart. Not Van Gogh, not yet, but I love art, though. But this is crazy. I'm, like, watching you live through Facebook on my laptop, and my heart is beating, like, through my whole, like, spine. I love it. This is crazy.
How old are you, Chansey?
Dave Navarro. Namaste.
Namaste.
I'm 32 years
Oh, okay,
young.
Great. What are you wearing?
How old is she?
32. She's all plenty right. old to talk Sorry? About this. Because Dutch women, whew, that's almost Forget always a win.
Yeah. Well, unless you're in the red light district, and then it's debatable if they're women.
That's
have true. You been down? It really, no, it is really true.
I've walked through.
Sorry.
Let's let this lovely young lady live her dream of talking to Dave Navarro, and then Dr. Drew, I will fill him in on my time in Amsterdam.
Oh yeah, he's got Mike has a story for every major.
Did
city
you have an accidental? Oh, an accidental? Yeah, made you re-question your whole.
I wish. Yeah, so, like, I wish.
Really?
Oh, hold it. Let's say what
you're saying. Sorry to interrupt. Like you are all talking about Amsterdam, but recently CNN named Rotterdam my hometown. The coolest city in the world. So you should all come to Rotterdam and visit. You never know.
It really is. I've been there many times.
But I have a question.
Go ahead. Yes. Go ahead.
You've clearly never
been
there.
Can I have a question for Dave?
Go ahead. Dave
Navarro.
Yes, dear.
So, hello?
Yeah, he's still listening.
Go do it.
You got him. And begin.
All right, so my question to Mr. Navarro is, so I know you've been walking this planet for over half a century.
He loves to be
and
reminded.
And don't get it wrong, I love it. Don't get it started, I love it. But my question to you is, so I just found out a couple of months ago, you have the ability to disconnect like your conscious mind from your body to be free of pain. And my question to you is, have you ever tried orgasmic transcending meditation?
Yes, I do. I do twice a day, 20 minutes twice a day, in the morning and in the evening.
Orgasmic transcending?
Orgasmic transcending? I didn't hear that word, but I'm willing to.
Yes.
That sounds even better. I went to the David Lynch Foundation. They didn't teach me any of that. I don't know what you're talking about. Please explain.
So this is the interesting thing. For the first time in 26,000 years, I'm calling all the way from all across the Atlantic Ocean to offer you, even though you have like a rich history, I Googled you, to learn more about orgasmic transcendent meditation, Mr. Navarro.
Let me ask you, if I make my way to Rotterdam, might I have an instructor?
An instructor?
You.
What kind of instructor do you need if you have law of attraction?
Vaginal.
It is not easy and not difficult to find.
A vaginal instructor.
Vaginal instructor. Yeah. Yes.
All right.
Thanks for filling us in on this. I'm not exactly sure that I know what you're talking about, but I appreciate it.
I do want Chauncey to put her on hold. I do want Chauncey to listen to what we're about to talk about. You have, because this is a perfect.
I'll continue it on Facebook.
Okay. Thank you. Good. But
I like how she's Dutch, but says Navarro like my grandma.
I know.
Ay, mijo. Hey, Navarro.
It did catch my ear. I have a flood of ideas here.
Sure.
I wanted to remind people about your documentary, too.
Okay, yep.
Tell them.
Morning Sun, the film is about my mother's murder. It happened about 30 years ago, a little more, by her then-boyfriend, who was an abusive relationship. Right. It domestically violent situation, went unreported because of a lot of shame and a lot of fear.
He goes back into prison and talks to this dude. It's quite a moving documentary.
No, I watched it. It's fantastic.
Okay, so
that's available on all the platforms, iTunes,
I bring
Amazon.
It up because that's a little snippet of the traumatic history.
Sure.
It is there, the Morning Sun.
Thank you.
A traumatic heritage, you know, in your childhood and young life. And then addiction kicked in, and then recovery, and then you've had a bunch of therapies. You're doing something very interesting now. Mike, do you know about this?
Mm-mm.
No, this will...
I'd love to hear.
Because Dave, I really was excited for you to talk to Dave, because his recovery reminds me of yours. in that
it's shitty.
No, it's not shitty, but he had some shitty feelings left over.
Oh, okay.
And so he keeps kind of, you know, his recovery is on point. He's doing his stuff. He's had lots of therapy and gotten sort of as much as he can. I gotten a lot out of it. Let's
a
be
lot.
Fair.
My life has become beautiful. Yeah. Now it's just a matter of feeling it.
Right. His feelings aren't connected, or at least the good feelings aren't so connected.
Right.
Does that resonate for you?
The positive ones aren't connecting.
Does that resonate for you a little bit?
It does. I mean, that I get frustrated that, you know, I haven't been in recovery all that long, but it'll be 15 years in October.
That's a long
road. That's a massive amount of time.
Anything more than 10 years, you're in 20, people stop counting after 20
times. But my point is that you'd think that after even, you know, 7-8 years, there would be this notion of like, hey, I feel great about life. Mm-hmm. And there was this moment, probably around 7 or 8 years, where I started to almost get this emotional decline, even though I continued to not use and drink.
Sure.
I felt this emptiness that was still existing.
Were you still actively working towards your spiritual connection? Because that is the key. And I'm with you in the fact that I tend to put that off from time to time.
Right. I thought that as long as I continually, you know, work a program, mm-hmm. that I got all bases covered.
But that is part of that program that they suggest is to have a spiritual part of your element of your program that you work on a daily basis.
Right.
And that you are in constant contact with a higher power, whatever that is to you.
I would argue, Mike is, because, you know, on the spectrum, I get to see the full spectrum
of people
engage in that way. Mm-hmm. He's pretty good.
Okay.
Pretty
good.
I'm good about it, but it's
a lot of his stuff is better than he gives himself.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
The trouble is that I allowed real life adult issues to get in the way of me. And it's bullshit, but I convinced myself that spending enough hours at work, devoting myself to being a husband or a father or both, it gets in the way of me doing woo-woo nonsense like meditation and prayer things. And that's all – it's all BS, you know.
Right. I mean
– But being a father and a husband is part of your spiritual program.
Yes. Yes, but it is.
We talked about it last time you and I did a podcast where I said I'd love to be able to sit here and say like, oh, I had a daughter and my life completely changed and now I'm just this super positive person. And although I can't express how much I love my daughter, I still feel like, you know, pretty worthless a lot. I still feel like life's not worth living a lot. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm. There's some existential issues that I have consistently throughout my sobriety, and I've been in and out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think that
that's the moment I was hoping you guys would connect on that,
right?
Because it feels the same to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I've definitely been there, and I struggle with that on it. You know. Often, you know, more often than I'd like to admit,
right?
To be honest with you. So in answer to what Dr. Drew's getting at is I've recently been experimenting and working with the psychedelics.
You're not experimenting. You're under a carefully managed thing.
Right. But I don't want to be irresponsible about it on a public platform.
No. We're not advocating it. I'm just saying this is something interesting.
Okay. So
it's an extreme intervention.
Yeah. In the sense of opening up, because what really I'm learning is that it's the ego that stands in my way
of everything.
And so the idea for me is to obliterate that as much as I can. And so I've been working in a very, you know, in a very structured sense in the world of psychedelics, in a therapeutic sense. And I'm not talking about going up, you know, going to Coachella and dropping acid, you know what
Burning
I mean? And expecting like my life to, you know, this is, you know, specific treatment with a intention, with a journey, and then integration and processing.
If you watch the documentary Becoming Cary Grant,
yes,
he had the same exact treatment. And I had watched that documentary like the day before I last saw
That's
you.
Crazy.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Now, what Cary Grant was doing was microdosing LSD.
It's not clear what was going on.
That's what they say in the film.
No, because he at one point says he was given a large dose. And I was like, okay. That was a different time.
Right.
Who knows what he was doing? But he felt it was very beneficial to him.
Yes.
I mean, I think what you're saying is really valuable to a lot of people, even people
Well, let's be fair. Well, what he's saying is that you need to continue to strive to get better. That's really what he's saying.
What I'm saying is about the ego.
This treatment could go bad.
Yes, it
could go very bad.
And it could potentially...
Still could go bad.
If there's a trauma survivor and without the right supervision or the right medical care goes
that,
into this, it could be more traumatic.
Right. And the question becomes, at what point is it worth the risk? That's the point. But go ahead about the ego. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, you started off by saying it's about destroying the ego, which I couldn't agree with more. And you're lying if you say that your ego doesn't get in the way sometimes of being as pure a human being as you want to be.
Sure.
Understandably, isn't it harder to defeat your ego when you're Dave Navarro, you're perfect looking, you play sold out shows, and you're this.
But your
rock
perception,
star, you
your
know?
Perception is not what goes on in my head.
No, but at the same time,
he
like,
has the
I'm
same exact
just,
stuff.
Justifiably, isn't it harder to defeat the ego when your ego has played in front of stadiums and has sold platinum records and has?
Well, let me say this. The answer to that question is. Is it possible to defeat the ego entirely? I doubt it. And I don't think that's smart to try and defeat it entirely because it protects us from a lot of really potentially damaging things. That's what it's for.
I would argue that we're using a term that may not even apply to what you guys are. Ego is a very
It's a broad term for defenses. It's a broad.
Something is preventing you from connecting to the humanity and to yourself in a larger way.
Sure. Okay. Yes. Huh? And you know, as an entertainer, a healthy amount of ego is important. Sure. It's vital. And that's, you know, turned on at a certain amount of time for a performance. I'm talking about the ego that gets in the way of the authentic self.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
And especially relating with people like you and I.
Personally, I think emotionally focused therapy can go a long way for many people to that.
Sure, sure.
To that end, but it takes a long time and it's a lot of work.
And I've been in it for about 17 years.
EFT, emotionally focused therapy, or it depends.
Oh, just therapy. I've been seeing a cognitive therapist for.
Yeah, see, I don't. That's what he's doing now too.
Is it CBT?
Do you have PTSD?
I don't know.
You have a whiff of that stuff.
I had sexual abuse, and I had some issues, certainly.
How old was the sexual abuse?
13. I was just about to turn 14.
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay. So you were, aware of what's going on is wrong.
Right.
And you were in touch with the shame.
Right. Well, the shame didn't come into play until after, and that was the strange part. A lot of people pass off. Much like when you hear the news story about the eighth grade or the freshman kid who bangs his female teacher. Everyone's like, well, but she was 19 years old. I was a willing participant.
Of course, okay.
But when I got done, I was like, this is not, something is wrong.
Yeah.
And it was so bad that I didn't even brag about it to my friends.
Understood. You know? Understood. But that's shame.
Yeah, for sure.
That is shame. And that is something that is traumatic. And that is, in the PTSD world, mm-hmm. we have something called EMDR, which is a type of therapy used to treat and redefine our understanding in the brain of that traumatic event and hopefully making some kind of peace and moving away from it.
The reason I steer away from even like focusing on it in that nature, and I know it's totally it's a juvenile way to look at it, to like rank PTSD. Mm. But I have friends that have seen war. I've talked to
of
you.
Course.
I've watched your documentary. My mother wasn't murdered by her boyfriend. I didn't get my leg blown off in Fallujah.
Here's the interesting thing about that.
Yeah.
My trauma that I'm working on isn't murder related.
Yeah.
When I was 15 years old, I knew damn well that that was a terrible situation, that was awful, it felt bad, and here's the reason it felt bad, because it's awful. I'm talking about early childhood trauma where the intellect is not intact enough
to make
those connections.
Make sense of it.
And it's just shame and confusion and isolation and loneliness. And that's the stuff that I'm trying to strip the ego away from protecting and get through.
What drug is being administered? Is it?
So far, I have worked with LSD.
Do we want to say this?
I don't know. We brought up the Cary Grant thing.
Yeah, so let's say that.
Okay, so one of the drugs that I've worked with is LSD.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in a very safe
and I noticed when I've
said it.
You noticed I noticed a difference in Dave when I went back and did the Dash radio show. I don't know if you see it, but I feel it and see it mm-hmm. in him.
But you've always been such a like kind-hearted dude. I mean, you never seemed this hard-edged guy, you know.
No, it's different.
I think
it's
that I was a little more in my head.
Yeah, okay. I would agree.
You know?
I would agree with that.
And now we're just having a conversation, and I'm genuinely trying to effectively and responsibly share my experiences. I know that we have a lot of people that, and a lot of them are potentially in precarious situations. I don't
want
to advocate anything, no, because I've been down, you know, listen, I've been to 12 treatment centers. I've been to 17 years of therapy. I do yoga. I meditate twice a day.
This has to be a last resort, you know? And somebody that's well treated and well cared for. You keep mentioning the sexual abuse. One of the traumas that sticks with me that you had was when these kids held your head underwater.
Yeah, that was
If you remember, I felt that before you admitted it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Which means you're carrying it around.
You never really bring up the mustachioed succubus.
Not anymore.
As much as you kind of go back to that.
Because you dismiss that.
What was the age of that?
Oh, man.
Because I have some
7th grade. Like, so 12, 11, 12, 13. Wow.
All this is going on at the same time.
Yeah. That's really, that's close to the same age. Yeah. I mean, I have things like that from when I was 5 years old, and I remember like other kids putting me in like the dryer and turning on the dryer.
Oh my God.
Scary stuff like that, you know, that all I did was internalize it as like there's something wrong with me. There's a reason why I'm the one, you know what I mean? And you make that, it becomes a story for yourself that you carry into your adult life, and that's mm-hmm. really not serving you or anyone.
A narrative. We have to take another break. When we come back, we will do your call. So stay with us. Stay on hold, everybody.
If you didn't know already, we have a YouTube channel. Go to YouTube.com/drdrew, YouTube.com/Dr. Drew. See the live videos and podcasts there. Subscribe, and you'll get it when we go live. Find the channel, get the videos today, but also be sure to download the podcast and listen to them as well. We appreciate your listenership. We appreciate your support. And we'll keep this thing going as long as you want us to.
We are back. And Mike, you were just saying that, you know, people might hear that and go, oh, I'm going to try that. But yeah.
Well, I better run out and get some. And the truth is like, you know, make it clear that you got to get to that point first. And Dave Navarro is an example of a man who's given thorough and
decades
comprehensive effort into his recovery.
Decades of sobriety, long traditional therapy.
Because I know people that are like, hey, you know, I'm addicted to pills, and I drink every day. I've been clean for 4 weeks, and now I'm going to Peru to do ayahuasca.
No,
and it's like, whoa.
No.
Give it like a decade. And
10 years
we'll see
of recovery and CBT and some therapies. Yeah, none of this is evidence-based either. So Dave is trying something that's...
I'm definitely on the perimeter
I just commend you both for going for full recovery, which I think is an important concept. They're stopping using... There's recovery, and then there's full recovery.
I have nothing about drugs and alcohol that is euphoric in recall. There's nothing about it that I sit and go, I must go back to that.
But is there still something that is still attractive about it? Maybe not euphoric.
I think that the substances themselves I have a romance with, but there's nothing
Mad Men.
Yeah, oh yeah. Drew loves this story.
What's the Mad Men story?
So, you know, Mad Men is on Sunday nights.
Oh, look at that.
Look at that. Look at
my Don Draper tattoo.
Shadow.
That is a great tattoo.
It's the best one I have.
The best one I have is Lemmy's signature because of the story attached to it. Mad Men was on Sunday nights on AMC. Mm-hmm. Great. And so, you know, Drew and I did Loveline on Sunday nights for many years, and I would watch right before I'd go in. Well, there was an episode probably about 4 seasons in where Don realizes he has a drinking problem.
Mm-hmm.
And in very mid-early 60s fashion, he's not going to do anything about it except for taper off a little bit.
Yeah,
I
remember that.
He's going to go dry for a little while. So it's his first day at work where he has decided, I'm not going to have a drink today. And Sterling and everybody get in, and they start pouring themselves cocktails in there. And Don is grabbing the chair... that he's sitting in very tightly and listening to the sound of the ice clinking around in the glasses, and he's getting a bit nervous.
And
he's getting
and we've learned since that John Hamm is a recovering guy.
Right.
So he was really tapping
into
something.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
And he's getting anxiety ridden, and I am watching this, and I'm always, you know, very impressed by the detail of Mad Men. And out of the blue, I do not feel it coming on at all. I projectile vomit onto my onto my living room table. Like, I had a visceral, it wasn't like, oh man, my stomach's hurting, I better run to the bathroom.
It
was
so
a visceral intense. And I was like,
I don't know if that's a euphoric recall.
Well, it's your body's memory, right?
Yeah.
The body's reacting to the stimulus. That's the power of it is what it is.
What I miss is not the chemical or the what it don't, you know, what the rewards of the chemicals were, but it's the secrecy, it's the sneaking around, it's the paraphernalia, it's the ugly, like,
think about that.
I'm not, you know what I mean? Not,
do some therapy there.
Yes. Well, you know, I'm just saying, if I was to talk about, if I was just going to talk about the elements of it that I thought were attractive, it's that narrative where it's like,
it's very important.
You become a caricature.
I think it's very important for someone like you to say that, because I can say that and it maybe falls on deaf ears, but there was a part of me that there's nothing I can do now that makes me feel like I'm cool, like I'm the guy on the action film or the guy in I'm not the villain in a Tarantino
film. It's weird
film.
To me.
But when I was going to going into bad neighborhoods to hook up drugs and driving around in the back of cars that
you're
of guys
a badass.
I didn't know, and this guys who were in and out of jail. I was in love with this, like you said, the secrecy and the glorification of this living on the fringes kind of aspect of drugs that there's nothing I can do now where I go like, yeah, I'm cool. Back then, there were a lot of moments where I felt cool, you know?
As a normie, it's a confusing thing.
Well, I think that's a whole element of the addiction that really doesn't get treated all that well.
Well, I'm just thinking that, and it's an identity.
Because people are addicted to using the needle.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah.
So, I mean, that is an activity. It's not...
Oh, no, people talk about that, but this piece, which is almost a part of the self,
right? But I think that
it's they're your traumatized self,
part of the same pie, in the sense that because there's a narrative that goes with the needle user, with the guy.
The needle is immediately reinforced. There's a biology,
but it's
that.
A lifestyle that you have to let go of. In addition to the actual addiction to the chemical.
Whenever we talked, we used to talk about having separate heroin groups because the culture of heroin was everyone related to what you guys are saying. Look, do I have to take another break still? No, okay. Let's take calls. We got lots of calls. Let's just get one. Lainey, are you there? Lainey.
Oh, hey, Dave. Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Hey, Drew. Hey, you live?
You live, woman.
See what's a greeting, Dave?
All right.
It's like aloha.
All right. Well, just recently, my brother has relapsed. He was clean for a year and a month. And we are extremely close, but I agreed to not see him for about a year until he, like, reached that year mark of sobriety.
Smart.
And, And so I guess next month is a family wedding, and my aunts that are overbearing kind of baby him. They're going to drive him to this wedding that he's going to go to, and he's super excited to see me. And I just don't think that it's a healthy situation to be. So my question is, do you guys think that I should go? Or how do you think I should deal with this situation?
Well, give us a little more on the detail. Weird feedback here.
Younger brother, older brother, what drug?
He's older. He's 35.
Mm-hmm.
What drug?
Meth and heroin.
Yeah. And
so it's a crapshoot as to how this guy's going to even turn up. You know?
Well, he's in a relapse right now, or he had just recently relapsed?
He just recently relapsed, was in a hospital for about a week.
So as far as you know, he's abstinent again right now.
He's working.
And you're agreeing.
This is the longest, like, he's been clean. He's been dealing with this, like, drug addiction for about 10 years.
Yeah. Okay, but you had said you made a deal that you weren't going to see him until he'd been sober a year, right? And so that clock has started.
Right.
That clock has started over again, correct?
No, I actually gave in on the 10th or the 11th month, and I saw him, had dinner with him, and that was about it. And then I guess like 2 months after that, he relapsed.
Do you have an Al-Anon sponsor?
No, he has like
a counselor,
owner of the safe house. What do I know?
Okay. Don't do anything without an Al-Anon sponsor. That is bad times. So go to an Al-Anon meeting, get a sponsor, discuss with her what you should do, and possibly it'd be okay to go. It possibly be okay, but that's between you and your sponsor. You have to. You ever heard the myth of the Minotaur, Ariadne's cord, the golden thread?
Here's my fat Minotaur.
Your fat Minotaur. Look at that. I show it on the video.
My friend Ryan as a fat minotaur holding a bottle of champagne instead of a sword.
It's so hot.
Thanks. Yeah,
I just vomited.
You're so turned on by it, too.
But is it? How dare
I? I've only beat off to him once.
But can she go with somebody supporting her and just, if there's an interaction, say, look, appreciate to see you, but I'm here for this wedding, and this is the intention. I'm not here to catch up.
That's right.
I'm happy or well, whatever. But
there's no way you can't get sucked in if you don't have somebody there, like a Al-Anon sponsor. That's what you need.
The only people in agreement to the whole, I mean, leave them alone, let them recover, are me and my mother. We have two aunts that are very overbearing, and they did raise him, but they're very overbearing, and they'll pick him up if he needs food.
But that's between him and his recovery. You don't micromanage his recovery.
The reality is that they can't expect change unless the family changes.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Right.
You know,
and we can't get them to understand that.
Hang on now. Lainey, I'm a little harsh. That includes you, and you have to go to Al-Anon, or you're not changing.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, what was the name?
That's not good. Al-Anon. You must go immediately and get a sponsor. Al-Anon. These are not mild. These are not casual recommendations. These are, if you do not do this, you are actively contributing to his demise. Okay?
Okay.
Good luck.
Excellent.
Got it. Thank you,
guys. Let's talk to, wait a minute. Where is this guy? Oh, yeah. Sean. He's on line 13. Are these the line numbers that are up here? Sorry, this is our first day in the clubhouse here, so... Okay,
hey
Sean.
Guys.
Hey.
A long-time listener, first-time caller,
You live, sir.
You guys ready?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so my ex of 8 months, she just broke up with me yesterday. On Friday, she took me to her aunt's wedding. It was pretty casual. Both of them have been married before. The guy who sexually assaulted her in high school was at the wedding, and it was about 20 minutes before anything was happening. And I noticed it was him because I looked him up on Facebook way back when she told me about it. I was like the first guy she ever talked to about it. And it was like, we worked it through, and she was like, you know, she recovered from it. You know, she buried it down, never really told anybody about it. He was a family friend. He was a cousin's friend. So I approached him. I didn't cuss at him. I wasn't ready to fight him. I approached him like, hey man, you owe her an apology. And then maybe about 10 people saw this scene. And the cousin, he grabbed me and pushed me away. And so I assume he knows. And then like, her dad came walking up and I broke down in front of him. I was like, hey, that's him. He's right there. Why don't you,
cause the dad,
why is this okay? Why is,
does the dad know?
Why is this here? Why is he here?
Did the dad know?
I told the dad. Sorry to cut you off. I told the dad back in December. He never knew before, and that was a big problem for me and my girlfriend at the time.
So
just because I went behind her back.
Let's cut to it. She broke up with you because of this incident?
Yes.
Okay. My guess is, and this is only a guess, is that she doesn't want you handling her affairs, let's say. It just adds to her feelings of powerlessness, right? This is stuff, this is for her advantage. Go ahead.
I was just, because last time we talked about it was a couple months ago, and she was furious about it. She was like ready like to almost do something about it, and she was like, yeah, if we ever see him, he shouldn't ever be at a family thing because they cut him out. And I just wasn't prepared, so I wasn't in full control, but I wasn't like screaming or losing. I was just this isn't okay.
Yeah, I get it.
And
I get it.
Yeah, I didn't mean to repeat myself.
But I'm not sure that I think as a male, your first instinct is, oh, she's mad at me because I was aggressive. I'm not sure that's it here.
No, I think Dr. Drew's exactly right. And I
100%
totally understand where you're coming from. Yeah, I understand your motives. I do not think you did anything immoral or wrong.
No.
But I'll bet you dollars to donuts, it's more of, wow, this is so my issue, and I don't need you getting involved with it. I've dealt with it my own way. She's probably invested a lot of effort into dealing with it in her own way, and you've just kind of totally hijacked the system.
Right, you sort of undermined her opportunity, should it ever come, to do whatever she wants to do. Now it's kind of all blown up. So I don't know.
Got it.
You know, I understand. Understand.
That sounds absolutely right. I haven't heard that perspective yet.
I remember a call we had on Loveline a long time ago that a husband was mad at his – excuse me, a wife was mad at her husband because the dad – her dad used to molest her. And she had worked a long time to get this guy to get – so that at least the dad and her – we're on good terms somewhat. And he's like, no, fuck that. He molested you for a decade. I'm going to go in. And he physically confronted the dad. Of course, his motives were pure, but she was furious at him because she's like, I've worked with therapists and different doctors for however long to get to the point where I'm at now. And you just took it upon yourself to do what you think is right. And that's where I think people get kind of, you know, pissy about it.
Okay. Mm. Yeah. Thanks, Sean.
Yeah.
We got to move on.
Good luck, buddy.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, guys.
Well done.
Yeah. Have a good day.
All right, man. You've got to go now to we're gonna take Melissa. She's on 16, whatever that is. This is for you and Mike and Dave here. Go ahead, Melissa.
Hey, Dr. Drew, Dave.
Hello,
other
Melissa.
Dude.
What's up? Other dude.
What's up?
What's happening? Is there anything else we can do for you?
My question was to Dave. I was wondering if he has any tips on staying sober. He mentioned, you know, getting out of the head. I think that's my biggest challenge with 5 years of sobriety.
One of the best ways.
How do you do it? I mean, I go to live shows.
I'll tell you, the number one best way to get out of your head in recovery is to be of service to others. Be of service to others. Help someone else.
But not. It's not... I think people get confused about service because they see Angelina Jolie out there serving the world.
I don't mean that.
You mean just paying.
You mean blow
paying attention,
actually,
servicing, get on your knees, service someone.
What I mean is hold the door for somebody.
Yes.
Be kind to somebody. If the person at Starbucks is an idiot and doesn't listen to the order that you said because youth of today is used to texting and reading, so they don't hear anything anymore. Which is, by the way, if you notice, I've snuck my own little agenda in there. Be kind and patient.
And be honor that person in some way. Like, identify something in that person that needs to be served and serve it in that moment.
That's
one
what I mean.
One on one is where this happens.
Here's another thing. 5 years, actually two things. 5 years was when I really started to struggle. So I'll just give you that.
Five and seven are tough.
I will give you that so that maybe and there's comfort there in numbers.
10.
Secondly, 5 years sober. Are you sponsoring anybody else?
She's not really sober. You're not in the program, are you?
Yeah, I haven't done any AA work.
Yes. There you go.
I wanted to call in to get some tips.
Yeah. Well, we're not allowed to say.
I haven't done any work, and I feel like it's been a rough road.
It's tricky.
It's like everything's coming full circle now. Like, everyone's left because I was one of those people where I was like, I'm not going to be one of those people that get rid of all my friends because, you know, I'm doing something differently.
Hey, let me
but
tell
honestly,
you something.
They just, they slowly faded.
Let me chime in. I can get rid of friends. Listen, I'm in the entertainment industry, and I work in a world of drug addicts and alcoholics. It's just not a reality for me to get rid of everybody who might pose a...
You don't want to. There's no reason.
I don't want to. I want to work on myself. I don't want to excommunicate everybody that is in my life.
But they kind of naturally just drifted.
That's for sure.
But Melissa, if you have the right support, if you're working a program and evolving in a way that... It's an evolution. It's not just not drinking or not using.
Like you said, you lose the identity almost. You almost lose the identity along with the chemical substance. I think that's the hardest part because you're like so lost.
Well,
so I think, you know, volunteering, that's great.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Maybe I should do the program.
Yeah,
what do you think?
Let me tell you something. I have never met anyone who really worked a program and had a horrible experience with it. Ever.
Ever.
Not one time.
Right.
And if they say they have, they haven't done the 12 steps that the programs are based upon.
Sure.
Okay, we're going to put you on hold and talk about it, Melissa. Thank you for calling. But that is a really important point, right? And people, I used to tell people in treatment, I would go, look, no sponsor, no treatment. No sponsor, no treatment. I would just repeat that and repeat that and repeat that. And that's just the way it goes.
Dave brought up, immediately brought up, being of service, and that is the best advice ever, and it goes far beyond, you know, recovery. But I will say that there's never been times when I got there's never been more of a peace within me than when I was helping other addicts who were maybe younger in their recovery. And that's not because it was because I could pat myself on the back. It's just that was a very clear example of me being of service, and I wasn't trying to beat anybody over the head with the idea of recovery. Or someone was genuinely looking me in the eyes and asking for help, and I I actually had some help you to could offer. Give it. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And it felt so it was it just that was those were those, you know, few moments when I could really pick it out and say, like, this is what it means.
I mean, even in my job, like, you know, if you want to talk about egos, we're talking about rock music, a band of egos. That's all it is, yeah. Right? So when I find myself getting in my way, getting in my head, getting carried away, I'm not saying be a doormat, but I'm saying I can pause and say to myself, okay, this is obviously getting very sticky here and uncomfortable. How can I serve this situation?
Right.
Or how can I serve myself? And sometimes serving myself by removing myself from it is the right action. But it's being able to have clarity to make that distinction and not perpetuate the problem,
right,
which is what I tend to do when you're unchecked and untreated.
With that, gentlemen, we've got to wrap this thing up.
All right.
It's been good time.
Yeah, it's been very good. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much again to Dave Navarro. Dave Navarro on Twitter, at Dave Navarro. And then is there anything else you'd like to plug, sir?
Ink Master.
Ink Master, Spike
Dash Radio.
Dash Radio is where my podcast is, and iTunes. And
Dark Matter on iTunes.
It's just honestly just a pleasure to be here. I appreciate you.
Yeah, I feel like we've lost track of you for a little while. It's good to see you back again.
I'm glad to be back.
I've known you a long time.
I know. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yes, we understand. You guys don't look your age. You're all
Dave doesn't. I just thought he'd stayed the same. But it makes a weird deal with the devil.
He definitely made some like Robert Johnson crossroads deal with the devil.
I'm not opposed to that deal. Believe me.
Thanks to Facebook Live followers. Stay tuned for another hour of Radio History. Hashtag You Live.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about. You live.